Hello, it's 2026 and we are back. A little later than we hoped, but we are back. I'm Mike, that's Chris, and this is the PHP Alive and Kicking podcast brought to you by PHP Architect and our partners over at PHP Score, but we'll talk about them a bit later. Now, we will bring up our chat, which I was trying to do. I knew I was going to fluff this opening because I haven't written it down, but if you are listening to the audio and you're on a YouTube, please head over to our Discord channel. Yeah, Chris found it. I couldn't find it. Can't do two things in one. Head over to our Discord channel, join in the chat, and it'll be nice to see you in there. There's all sorts of people in there, including our guest is already in there causing trouble from what I can see. We have also, as I said about the YouTube channel, we've got a magazine. Please do sign up to the magazine. We have a discount code for you, Alive3, that will give you 3 months of the digital annual subscription free. So there's a lot of great content in there. Chris is always writing in the magazine. If you want to write for the magazine, do get in contact. We're also looking for people to contribute. I'm guessing Chris is laughing at something in the chat. I can't see the chat at the moment, so I've got my script in front of me.
Sarah says, I don't cause trouble. I am trouble.
Yeah, that does sound a lot better. Yeah. as well as the magazine and our development work we do, we also run a conference of PHP Tech. And this year, we'll also be running JS Tech alongside PHP Tech. So do, if you've not got your tickets, please get your tickets, come over. It's a great conference and we all have a good time. As well as that, you can also get swag. We have a swag store with all sorts of things in there for you to grab, t-shirts, hats, and mugs and cups and bottles and all sorts. Generally a new thing sort of gets added every now and then. Every time Eric has his brand, a new idea, it goes onto the swag. Right, so you have put me off, Chris, because you did say that our guest would be on the screen when we opened, and she's not here, so I was a bit thrown by that. And it completely changed my opening. So shall we bring in today's guest? We started off with this guest on our second episode.
We did.
Sarah. Hello, hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Hi back. Yes, second episode and second, episode 20. Is that how that works?
Next time,
first 200.
Yep. Yeah. And the first one of this year for us as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're not starting the year, you're late. You just gotten off by one error. That's all.
Yeah. I'll take that. So, Chris, what we talking about today with Sarah? We can't ask her how she got into PHP. We've done that one already.
I mean, we could. It might have changed.
How are things going with PHP? Oh, it's looking bad. It's looking bad, fam. AI has, you know, completely. I don't know. I just want to complain about AI. Can I complain about AI?
Yeah, please do.
All right, stop using AI, kids. Write real programs.
But we do.
That's it. That's
with AI. I'm currently making Eric laugh.
We did have a serious discussion about AI earlier, and there is a right way and a wrong way to use it. Unfortunately, most people use it the wrong way and don't realise the dangers that they're getting themselves into. You've got to know what you're doing, especially if you're writing any sort of program. You've got to know programming to be able to pick out when AI gets it wrong. Because at the end of the day, Joe? Our server guru Joe said, it's just matching words. That's all it does, really.
It's autocomplete with delusions of grandeur, yes. But
yeah.
I will also say that my feelings on AI are more nuanced than AI bad. It's fine. There's a place for it somewhere.
So Eric is suggesting that AI is the only friend he has. This isn't true. Some of us are employed by him and do occasionally like him.
I was going to say it's not true because AI doesn't actually like him.
I mean, that's also true.
ChatGPT called me.
Well, I mean, ChatGPT started chatting to me the other day. I can't remember the context, but he didn't like me. I was staring back at it.
I mean, I've got to the point where Claude actually swears at me. Literally, it has started using my style of talking. So if I'm telling it that there's a bug, I'll say things like, fuck's sake, you've got it wrong again. And it goes, oh, for fuck's sake.
I want to imagine what it says back to you, but I also want to keep this podcast clean. So
I will send you some of the transcripts, Sarah. It is definitely not PG.
Given our last chat, I think that's fine.
So, interestingly, me and Chris had a quick conversation before Sarah jumped on, and we ran through what we were going to talk about, and then we said, well, Sarah, so after that, it could go anywhere. We actually derailed within seconds. Yes. We weren't actually going to talk about AI today at all. So so we actually go on to the subject we were planning for this evening's show.
I'm just helping you fill time because I don't think our main topic's going to do all that.
Before we get on,
I'm sure
it will.
I'm sure we can get it.
Can we also talk before we do about the fact that I can't complain to HR about being bullied at work because the one bullying me is HR?
Isn't that normal?
Eric, yes.
How do we?
Look in the chat. We all swear at you, Chris. It's just a fun thing to do.
I know. It's true. I mean, I swear at me too, but that...
I think it's in the employee manual, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's in chapter 6.
Yeah. Part of orientation, they say you direct all bullying to Chris.
Yeah. It was added just after I joined. So, Sarah,
it would have been weird if it was before you joined and your orientation said, be sure to bully Chris.
If anyone's wondering where that comment has come from, it is in our Discord. It's just not on our screen yet because there is a bit of a lag. If you want to follow the conversation in real time, get over into our Discord channel.
Mike, look at the top right.
It should be
screen.
On the screen for anyone watching because we're also lagged in addition to like.
Yeah, when I'm looking at it, I can't see it.
Really?
The top on my screen, the top one, it says that's the best description of AI coding I've heard.
Oh, weird! You know, it's on my screen.
Impressive. I don't see, but I've got Discord open as well, so I can see Eric's next comment about swearing at Chris. It's just a fun thing to do, but it's not on my screen. So
maybe you just haven't scrolled properly.
Well, it's not me that's scrolling. It's just the computer. See, everyone's bullying me now.
Yeah, because it's a fun thing to do.
It's a fun thing to do. I'm glad you
Eric.
Understand. I mean, Eric's now typing, so anything can be happening next.
Oh, God, yeah, I don't want to know what Eric's now going to say about me.
Oh, yeah, this is alive and kicking off is what this is doing.
Our employee manual is the only employee manual with several redacted sections.
Oh, I want to make an Epstein Files joke, and I really shouldn't.
So, Sarah, what are we actually supposed to be talking about? Because at the moment, it's anything but that.
Well, as I recall, about 2 weeks ago, we were actually bullying Eric.
Yes.
During his podcast. And I was complaining that, how come you don't know work trees, Eric? What is wrong with you, Eric? And why don't you know work trees, Eric? So, yes, I think we should all focus on bullying Eric now and discover Git work trees, which I am a huge fan of.
That sounds like a good idea. It's now a good time to point out that I have no idea what work trees are either.
Do you know what Git is?
No.
All right. We're halfway there. You got the Git. Now we need the work trees. You know what branches are, right?
I've heard of work trees, but no, I'm not. I've never used them myself, and this will be interesting. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, they're more useful for some workloads than others, and I'm going to be the first to admit that. And I know, particularly with web development, it's probably going to look less useful for a lot of people, but I think there's still some opportunity there. So, Yeah, cool. I mean, should we jump into it?
Yeah. Does that mean you want me to share your screen for you?
Yeah. Let's look at that. Time that. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna have to change my right window. There we go. So work trees. So everybody, hopefully, who is listening to this podcast, and I should focus my eyes up there where the camera is, has probably used Git by this point. You have probably opened up branches to do your work on, you know, Git checkout to switch to a branch, make your change, hack, make sure it works, test everything, obviously, and then push up your pull request, right? Simple. Well, very few of us work on only one single pull request at a time, right? We don't have just one bug to fix at a time. We have multiple ones, and we got to wait for reviews and things like that. So we have multiple branches going at once, and switching between those branches is fine as long as you, as long as your current checkout is clean, you can switch checkouts to the other ones and go back and forth. But you know, maybe you're halfway through a thought when you need to change tasks, or maybe you have build artifacts in one of them, like you're, putting together all your JavaScript and compressing it into, where you shorten the variable names and compact things together. That's the thing JavaScript things do, right? Yeah. Maybe you don't have to rerun that every time you switch branches. It'd be really nice to just have different folders on your file system. This one has this ticket in it. This one has that ticket. This one has that ticket. And they have the full set of tree. And a lot of you probably will just do that by just making another clone. You'll just Git clone the repo multiple times and you'll have multiple copies of it. This suffers from two problems. Number one, you're using a lot more space because you now have the entire Git history in every single checkout. And yes, asterisk, you could do a clone depth of one to avoid having all the history. But number two, you can't really share between different branches. And that's really important if you're working on a project where you've got multiple branches that you're developing at the same time. And the PHP source code happens to be one example of that, because we have the master branch where we're currently developing 8.6. And we also have the 8.5 branch, the 8.4 branch, 8.3 branch, 8.2 branch for all the old versions that are still under some level of support, but are not the most recent branch. So if you're fixing bugs in PHP or submitting patches to PHP, you're going to probably have to switch between those branches and share commits between them as you're working on them. So with all of that background out of the way, I'm actually just going to show you what working on, what utilizing work trees actually looks like on a day-to-day basis by showing you my process for when I fix a bug or introduce a new test. So I have my Git checkouts of the PHP project, and you'll see I've got the PHP source directory where the master branch is at, and then the 8.5, 8.4, 8.3, 8.2, these are all checkouts of different branches. And the way these got sort of created, obviously, I see my terminal there, and I'm clicking on the wrong screen, and that's hilarious. the way this works, obviously, is like my original checkout was just a Git clone, Git, whatever the heck the URL is for the GitHub repo, that checked out PHP source. That was my original checkout. And then I can go into PHP source. And if I want another one of those checkouts somewhere else, like I say, Git work tree, add, always more pressure when you know more people are watching you type. Give us a path. And let's say I've got a bug that goes all the way back to 8.1. So my current set of checkouts for the active branches isn't enough. I need a checkout of 8.1 as well. So I'm going to just give an arbitrary path. Obviously, naming it after the version makes sense. And say, you know what, just create me a new local branch called PHP 8.1. And that should track upstream PHP 8.1. Upstream is the name for the remote, as I call it. Origin is the default. But what I don't like about using origin for remote names is that so many examples assume origin. Therefore, you can actually wind up pasting something that isn't quite right. So this is just a quirk of mine, but it would be origin PHP 8.1 if you want. And what that's going to do is it's going to create a brand new folder off of this one called 8.1 that is checked out to the PHP 8.1 tag or branch rather on the upstream, and it's going to create a new local branch. And when we go there, we can in fact see that, oh, PHP 8.1 is now end of life was the last commit. So we know we're definitely on the right branch, right? But if you are, how do I want to do this? I did not create a script for this, by the way. I'm just going off the cuff. One thing you might notice is that Git is now just a simple file rather than an entire directory of things. The only thing in that file is just a reference that says the actual Git is over there somewhere else. Under PHP source Git worktrees 8.1. So this tells us where all of the history can be found. So we now only have one copy of the history that's off of PHP source Git. And if we were to make a commit over here, let's say we make a new test. Let's say we want to make sure that when we write a PHP script, if we say 1 + 1, the result is always 2. This is a very important thing that, you know, could change. You never know when math is going to jump out of the way. I'm going to put this in the Zend test directory because this is testing something about the scripting engine. And I'm just going to call it 1 + 1 PHPT. And for the test file format that PHP uses, this is called the PHPT format. There are at least 11,000 examples in the source tree right now. I can't remember the exact number, but there's a lot. So you can find examples of it anywhere, but and I just realized I started it wrong. They start with these headers to define what section of the test file we're in. We're going to go into the test section, say, you know, check that 1 + 1 = 2. This is just a descriptive name for the test. And then we're going to put in a file describing what the test is supposed to do. We'll say var dump 1 + 1. And then we'll throw in an expect section. This is what we actually expect the output to be. The result should be 2. Pretty straightforward. Once we have that, we can actually run this test. Well, we haven't compiled yet. So I'm going to go through that really quick. If you want to build PHP from source, you can go to php.net/git.php, and that will give you instructions for all the packages you need, how to run the compile process. I'm doing this from memory because I have done this far too many times in my life, except I can't type because people are watching me. Build conf, we'll create our configure script. We're going to run configure. I always say enable debug just as a force of habit because I want to get messages when things go really wrong. I promise this won't take too long, but you can see how long this is going to take on my laptop, which is, this is a VMware session running on an M1 Pro MacBook. So it's not the fastest it could be on a laptop, but it's not awful. I've got 4 cores in here, so I'll do a MakeJ5. And within a few seconds, this should finish up. Building PHP is actually really, really fast compared to a lot of compiled programs. HHVM, God, I had a machine with more than 100 cores and it would take 15 minutes to do a full build on that thing. It is a very different animal. So almost done. Sorry, go ahead.
Whilst that's compiling, which it just did, in that test file, you put the closing tag. Is that actually required?
Strictly speaking, no. The test file runner, the PHPT runner, will actually divide on the sections first, and then it will look in what's inside the section. So you can run it without that closing tag. The reason that I have gotten in the habit of putting it in is that as a policy, in order to make sure that for a reason that I'll get into a second, we've decided you should, and I'm not sure if this is a must or a should, but you should put a closing tag. The reason for that is because the standalone web server that we build and ship with PHP, you can just plug that PHPT file straight into that, or you can run it straight from the CLI, and it will be able to run. The output won't quite look right because it'll have the other sections in there, but you're not going to get parse errors out of it. By the way, if you were watching close, you might have noticed that I had an error and I just quietly did a git reset head and then hit make again and it worked. That's something that shouldn't be happening. I only just noticed it this morning when I was doing a dry run of this. the first build is, I think it's creating the Zend executor files in the wrong order from when they're being built. So you just kind of have to like tell it to run again. But it only seems to be a problem on 8.2 and older. So I don't know why that is, but I'll come in and fix that bug later. I didn't want to focus on that one for here. So now that we have a build of PHP, you'll actually see that dial the CLI PHP has our CLI PHP executable. It's there. It's ready to run. So let's just say make test, and the test we want to run is going to be Zend test 1+1. And yay, test passed. We ran this test. It output int 2. It matched the expected output. Everybody's happy. So, oh, right. I haven't staged it yet. Yeah, this is definitely a problem with, that's fine. I'm only going to add that test. Ignore that opcache git c file in there. That got generated and either should be ignored. Probably should be ignored. I don't know. That's a bug in the 8.1 branch. Pretend it doesn't exist. But I can make a commit with just that file and say, add new test for important regressions with a Z just to make it look cool. Now, you may think, when will 1+1 not equal 2? There has been a time. PHP 5.3.0 through 5.3.9 had a clever little bug in it with, it was either octal or hex number parsing, where you could construct a perfectly valid looking expression of 1+1 or 1+0x1 technically. And it would not parse correctly. And it would give you results of, I want to say 3 is the answer it would give you. But we'll come back to that. I'll put something on my Mastodon account showing you how to make that happen on 5.3, whatever. In any event, we now have a commit. It's on this branch. It's ready to go. But of course, we can't just add this test on 8.1. We want to add that to all branches and then push them all at once to the upstream so that we're fixing all of them in order. So if you look at php.net, I believe it's under /workflow of git.php. There's a link to go to our Git workflow that says how we're supposed to fix bugs. You'll see that we actually want to merge these up to each of the other branches. So I'll come to 8.2 and I'll say, great, let's merge with no fast forward and a log from PHP 8.1. And I should have changed my editor because now people are going to think I use Nano all the time, and that's embarrassing. But what we'll see in our log after that merge is that, yes, we've added the new test for the important regressions, and we've got this merge commit up at the top. And I just realized you probably can't see my mouse, so that's not going to be helpful.
We can't see the mouse. We can't see.
Oh, you can't see the mouse. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure. Now that we've merged that in, let's go ahead and do the test. I've already compiled all these other branches, so we don't have to sit through another compilation process. And we can say test. Test passed on 8.2 as well. Fantastic. And we can just repeat that process a few more times. Merge from 8.2. Oops. Oh, my goodness. Okay. I mentioned this problem exists on 8.2. No, this is actually not the same problem. This is because I was doing a dry run and I forgot that I had already written that file. Yes, do it live. Always do it live. So we merged from 8.2. It's going to merge the branch from 8.2 and 8.3. And if we look at our commit log, we'll see that, yes, we have the original commit that came from our 8.1 branch, where it is, and our merge commits moving on up. And let's go ahead and test that. Good. 1+1 still equals 2, even on 8.3. And then repeat. Oh, yeah, no. I did that wrong. I did not change the branch number. If I do this, it will abort. How much did I just screw this up? Oh, I did not screw it up too much. Good. It didn't complete any of that. Yeah, okay, let's try that again. Don't merge from 8.2, merge up from 8.3 is what I meant to do. I tried to do that too quickly. And now we have the original commit, the merge is going up. Run the test. Yay. And again, this is doing it using the PHP that I built earlier, that is 8.4.19 dev. Move it up to, oops, gosh darn it. Move it up to 8.5. Merge from 8.4. I promise you the commits are in there. Run the test. Still looks great. And we can now move up to the master branch, which for reasons isn't named 8.6. It's just named PHP source. And we can do the final merge from 8.5. And once again, we can see it's merging all the way up. Do the test. And now we'd actually be ready to commit this if push this if we actually wanted to push it. So I could say, in fact, you know what? I will say push to my own version because I don't have to push to the official PHP repo. All of those branches. Let's push 8.1, 8.2, 8.3, 8.4. Oh my God, how much merging did I do here? Is that right? 8.1, 8.2, 8.3, 8.4, 5, and master. Nobody read my password. And then our push comes from, again, since we only have a single Git, like canonical history tree, like our .git directory that actually does exist from here, by the way. See, it's a directory in this one because this is our official checkout. It's able to push all the branches at once from a single spot. They're sharing their commits all the way across, and we're just bouncing through them by switching directories. And we don't have to recompile every single time because all of those build artifacts are still in the same spot. They're in different directories, but they're sharing a history. And that's work trees. That's the main thing about them. Let's say this was the last we were ever wanted to use 8.1. Great. We can just get rid of that directory, right? Oops, rmrf. And you're like, fantastic, directory's gone. But of course the branch is still there. We still have the branch available. We could still say git log php 8.1. Still there. But it also thinks that branch is still checked out. So if I tried to say branch delete php 8.1, says, nah, brah. You already got it checked out somewhere in this directory that doesn't exist. So when you get rid of any work tree path, you do need to say prune. And so that goes out to all the paths that it knows work trees exist in. It says, if it's not there anymore, forget it ever existed. And now it's actually gone. So now I could delete the branch if I wanted to, but I actually don't. Although I just realized I'm going to have to clean up my Git history now because I'm pushing things that have no intention of ever going to the official repo. So obviously for any project with compilation artifacts, you saw how long it took to build just one release, one branch of PHP. You don't want to have to rebuild the entire thing every time you're switching branches. That's super expensive. You don't want to have completely separate checkouts because then you can't do things like push all the branches at once. I find them super valuable in that way. Using them in a web development environment, probably not going to see quite as much advantage to it because generally web development, you're working on, you're still working on multiple branches at the time, but they're feature branches. And you may notice I have some feature branches in here. I forget what Closables was about. It's probably something to do with what Larry's working on with his composable callables. I've been doing some stuff for him on that. Highlight is actually a branch of the doc repo. I'm working on getting highlighting working correctly in a dark mode version of the PHPNet website, because I hate light mode websites and I should fix this one. But it turns out syntax highlighting is a sticking point, because syntax highlighting is assuming different styles. But anyway, you can use feature branches the same way here. So yeah, I don't know what else to add. Any questions, class?
Well, before we go to questions, let's just hear from our partners first of all, and then we'll drill you some questions. I've got a few. So yeah, we'll be back in a sec.
Thank you to our partners at phpscore.com. Every app builds up technical debt over time. It's the price we pay for shipping new features and moving fast. When we build up too much of it, though, it can start to impact how we work. Team velocity suffers, bugs become more frequent and take longer to fix, and everyone starts to get a little frustrated. The key to managing debt is to measure it. A credit score can help you understand how well you're managing your financial debt, and now there's a credit score for your technical debt. Go to phpscore.com to get a free technical debt score and monitoring for all of your PHP applications today.
Thank you, PHP School. That was a weird echo. So, first of all, I'm going to have to rewatch that on half the speed because
yeah,
I couldn't keep up with all the.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Chris has been telling me off recently, because I and a few of other of our colleagues, I'm a bit of a GUI freak, so I quite often I've been using Gitkraken for so long to do anything with Git, but I'm trying to force myself to do everything in the terminal, so I'm not very afay with all the commands and the right order to place things. So I will be going back and rewatching that to just home in on what was being typed for each command.
I won't judge anyone for using GUIs. GUIs are great. I have nothing against GUIs. PHP Storm, very good GUI.
Yeah, for me, it's more of I'm looking at ways to reduce the amount of RAM I'm using when I'm working. We kind of joked about it before we came on live, and one of the reasons was I was using some RAM-heavy GUIs in my workflow. So I've been trying to force myself. I've gone back to using NearVim, which has been a bit of a pain the last couple of days, trying to remember it all trying to get my head around I've used LazyVim, so I'm still trying to get my head around the presets in there of things that I'm not used to, so that's been interesting. But Git has been one I really want to try and work more in the terminal. So as I say, sidetrack slightly, but I will be going over that first bit slightly. So obviously, most of the people that are watching are web developers and will have our development environments on our system. Quite a lot of people will probably be using things like Docker to do that. So how do work trees work within that? So I'm thinking of a scenario where I'm working on a feature and then I'm waiting for some feedback on that feature. So just a small feature. I'm waiting for some feedback from whoever's doing the review. I'll start on my next ticket, which is another sort of feature. When I have to go back, I've found that things like the Docker containers have been adjusted, because it's been a little while. There's been a while before I got the feedback. How does using the work trees, is that going to be a problem? If you've got changes to your work environment, like the Docker containers and things like that, or would you? I would assume that you'd have to re-spin up the Docker environments. I would have thought. So you end up with more than one Docker environment running, I suppose.
I'm going to try and imagine sort of like where the intersection between Docker and the actual Git repo exists. Like when you do multiple projects right now, do you have like a Docker container for each basically ticket that you're working on? Or is it a single Docker container that, you know, just grabs out of whatever happens to be in the checkout at the moment?
Yeah, it would be, it's a set of containers that the Docker files are in the repo in the branch that I'm working on. So I quite often end up switching, or can be switching between branches, right, going backwards and forwards, and I'm having to re-spin up the Docker containers.
But if you just like stop work, and restart the container.
Yeah, just stopping and restarting. Would that be? I'm just wondering, because WorkTrees, when you first showed it to me, I thought that looks like something that would have really helped me in the last few weeks. Chris is nodding his head because he knows what I've been working on, because he's been helping me with a few things. I'm just wondering whether this is an option to try and make things a bit easier. So some of the complexities that I've found with the project I was working on, where I was jumping backwards and forwards, was actually submodules, which was causing me quite a few headaches. I'm just wondering if WorkTrees would help with that. I'm quite intrigued by this workflow.
I mean, in my mind, sort of like, again, kind of filling in some of the blanks with what you're describing of that workflow, it would seem to me, if you had, let's say, three different work trees for like the, you know, ticket A, ticket B, ticket C, and each one of those has its own Docker file in it that, you know, maybe one is a slightly different set of, you know, packages, or one is a slightly different set of rules to run on startup or something like that. Like, you could do a Docker compose in each of those three different places and have the three different ones running, possibly with, you know, Docker stop, one for this, Docker stop, the one for that one. Like, I would think it would add the flexibility where you can have multiple ones running at the same time, because there are different places where different versions of this Docker file are checked out. But if your sort of like muscle memory is that you only ever have one running at a time, and it's the one that's in whatever the current directory is, maybe you already have scripts that just say like, git quick change some branch name will do Docker stop container, checkout new branch, Docker start, compose and start container might be what happens there. So like, if you've got that muscle memory, if you've got those scripts already, like, I'm definitely not gonna be the person who tells you not to do them. But if you don't have those yet and you want to set those up, you have the opportunity to decide, do I want that model where I have a single container in a single directory and that's just all I ever work out of, and that's fine and I don't need work trees for that? Or do I want to have a bunch of different ones that are simultaneously running so that, if somebody comes over to my desk and they're like, hey, what's the progress on ticket 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? You open the browser, you go to the one that corresponds to container for that ticket, and you can just show them immediately. You don't have to wait for branches to switch and containers to build and start up and compile your JavaScript resources or whatever like that. So, I mean, it could help you. I don't know enough about your exact process.
Yeah, it's interesting. I got slightly distracted by the, I was just reading what the comments were coming in as well, just to, I'm probably going to get the sack now, but I've not actually listened to last week's show yet.
Eric is commenting that with web development, you have to do stuff like compose or install. And if different branches are requiring different packages or different versions of packages, it means you have to rerun compose or install on those branch switches too. If you're in a different work tree, your vendor directory is different in that work tree, and it's a non-issue.
The only thing I can kind of, sorry, Chris, I've just thought of that might be a slight issue is, and if I'm wrong, someone can shout at me. If Joe's watching, he'll probably shout at me for this. But if I've got the multiple Dockers running, containers running for the different branches, I'm guessing that there's going to be an issue with ports clashing. So,
I mean,
actually saying what you said about having some sort of script or an alias that will stop the Docker, check out the new branch, restart Docker, is actually a really wish I'd kind of thought of that already, but my brain's been so deep in code that I've not thought about how could I make this flow easier for me when I'm jumping backwards and forwards. So it's certainly thought provoking and given me a few ideas that I'll probably completely hash together and make a complete mess of, and then call Chris and say, "Can you come and fix this script for me?" and get Chris to help me out. But
on the subject of scripting, you talk about that problem of running into like port conflicts. Mm. There's a part of me who wants to say like, "Oh, in my startup a project thing," because this is something I would do at Facebook and Mongo as well. I had a Git alias called New, and it ran a script that did a whole bunch of things to kind of like set up my environment. And I would say, you know, Git new 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because that corresponds to the ticket. That would create a work tree, you know, in your case, construct a Docker image. And part of that Docker image, I might decide to make it do something like, oh, let's add a new IP address to our networking stack on, you know, some bit of like unroutable space, like give it 169.254. The top 8 bits of the ticket number dot the bottom 8 bits of the ticket number. And then add something to the host file so that the ticket number will go to that IP address. And now you've got every port you want because we're only binding to the port for that address. Mm. And you can, again, have them all running and you get to them through, you know, HTTP ticket 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's just :80 by default. Mm. That's the first thought that pops into my head for doing that. There's probably much easier ways.
Yeah. And Eric's just said about, Lando works really well with this. I can see how that would work perfectly because that deals with any port conflicts for you. As Chris replied to him, the project I'm thinking of is a raw Docker. It's a client one, so I don't do anything with the Docker images. That's all down to someone within the client's dev team. So, but yeah, I think I can certainly see a way of using this for me personally. Not just in work, but I could have all sorts of things running. And I'm just thinking, I'm now my brain's going not just thinking about the Git trees, but I'm now thinking about different aliases that are going to help me move around some of the stuff that I do outside of work as well, because I generally jump around all my little small projects and I'm like working on three of them at the same time sometimes. This is really interesting. I'm going to let Christopher speak, so he's going to jump in at a moment, but he looks a bit distracted at the moment.
I'm just reading Discord, Slack, and listening in. So one of the things that sort of occurred to me in the middle of that was actually what Eric has raised about Composer and JavaScript compiles and all that. Example of one of the issues that I would have. One of mine is running PHP 7.4, another branch is running 8.2, and another branch is running 8.5, with different requirements in each one. And I'm guessing the answer is going to be script it.
I mean, that's usually my answer to everything, but yeah.
Because I can just see how it would be helpful if it could do tree shaking and share the bits that don't change so you don't have to do a full reinstall. But that gets really complicated.
But once you've done the install, once you've created the branch tree and you've done the install, you don't need to do it again? Is that...
Unless you change it, yeah.
Unless something changes. So once you've got your three branches for 7.4, 8.2 and 8.5, do the code composer install in each one of those work trees, then you're set, and then you can swap around, and you're not having to redo it.
So for your situation,
which I know your situation, I know which what you're referring to, Chris. It would be perfect because it's also a Lando. Yeah. It uses Lando for the Docker, so it would be absolutely perfect for you to be able to jump around those branches.
I'm already seeing a nice little script. WT create with branch name and URL and let it do the rest for me.
Never repeat yourself. Programmers were meant to be inherently lazy creatures.
Yeah.
Never ever do work that the computer can do for you.
Look, I will not spend 10 minutes doing something manually if I can spend 10 hours failing to automate it. It's as simple as that.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But all those 10 minutes add up to more than an hour eventually.
Just remember, an hour of struggling with an AI prompt can save you 5 minutes of reading documentation.
Exactly. And this is where Boost comes in. It reads the docs for you. Laravel's Boost will literally read the Laravel docs for you.
And some of its key packages that it uses. And
I think I've commented this before. I know nothing about actual PHP code. So you say to me Laravel Boost, and I'm like, cool. I like Laravel. Laravel's cool, probably. I like Taylor. Taylor's nice.
So there's another episode we can do with Sarah. So we're now up to 4 episodes with Sarah. The first one that we did, this one, which is work trees, the third one, which is your elephants behind you. And then the fourth one is teaching you Laravel live on air.
Oh my God. That sounds like such an awful and awesome idea at the same time. I've been working on PHP for 24 years. Jesus. Time to learn it.
You've just been writing the literal language, but you never actually use it.
I'll go back to my original comment when we tease who is coming on for our second episode. The loudest voice in PHP that's never written a line of PHP ever.
That's not true.
I know it's not true. No,
I've written plenty of PHP. I just don't tend to use frameworks and such. These newfangled things that you kids came up with. I have gray hairs because I haven't used them.
No, that's going back to ones. Yeah, that's been fascinating with those work trees. I've heard people talk about work trees. I think John mentions work trees at some point.
John probably brings up the work trees because I keep pushing on them, and he knows it's a button that he can press at Eric's. So.
But yeah, no, I've not seen them in action, and it fascinates me. And I think if you're using something like Lando for your environment, work trees, if you jump around, it's going to be perfect, absolutely perfect. Especially if you're jumping around PHP versions. That's what will be interesting, I suppose, actually, thinking about it, is how. So Lando produces how the Lando, when it spins up the Docker containers, the naming convention for the Docker containers, is that going to be an issue?
I don't. The only thing I know about Lando is he looks good in a cloak on the Millennium Falcon. So
this is where we normally go and ask Joe.
This is Joe. Where are you? Why are you not watching?
Joe did reply earlier.
He did like my toot about coming on tonight, so he knows this is happening. It's his fault for being here.
We've told the whole team, but yeah. So everyone should know. Yeah, no, that's an interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of experimenting, a lot of breaking stuff. But that's what we do. We break stuff and find easier ways to do things.
So I have a tangentially associated question.
Okay.
Whilst we were going through there, your literal test was 1+1.
Yeah.
How is it getting gradually slower as you go up the branches?
You know what? I didn't look at the timings. Was it really?
Yeah. 0.0007 by the time it got to PHP 8.5. In 8.1, it was exactly zero.
I don't know is the short answer. My guess is it was probably unrelated because, again, I'm running this in a VM on my laptop. And I don't know, maybe my CPU is heating up and throttling itself. I don't know. Realistically, PHP should be running faster on later versions. So
I would hope so.
Yeah. There's a lot of... unknowns in that is all I'm going to say.
It was literally like 6/1000ths of a second, so I don't think it's actually going to matter much.
6 milliseconds is a lot, but you know what? I'll bet you it could be. When we think about PHP's performance, we think about the per request time, not the entire process lifecycle. And so when we run something on the CLI, we have the entire process startup to go through. And so every extension has to do its little startup things. And then we actually run the script. And then every little extension has to do its shutdown things. And the whole thing has to shut down. It could be that more recent versions of PHP are doing more work at that startup and shutdown end.
Yeah.
Oh, makes sense. Order to make the per process thing a lot shorter, or shorter enough that you feel it over the long term. So PHP is optimized for multi-request. It doesn't behave well on single request. That's my best guess that I have.
Yeah, it's just an interesting one. Watching the numbers go up, I was thinking, okay, has something crept in that we didn't notice? But then thought, well, it's such a tiny amount of time, probably not.
6 milliseconds is not a small amount of time, bro. 6 milliseconds is a long time.
Not 6 milliseconds, 0.0007.
Not point, not seven. Okay, six tenths of a millisecond then.
Yep. Okay. A really, really, really short time.
Yeah, I want to say almost a millisecond for what it's doing is a really long time. So I really want to point my finger at the startup and shutdown processes, not the request time. Is where I'm going to go with that. But if you're watching this and you want to go do some extensive testing on PHP's performance, do it. Post your results in your methodology. And if there's a problem, that's something to fix.
And then I know how to do it in WorkTrace. So
I encourage you to tell us we're slowing down. But back it up.
Well, I know I learned a lot in that one.
Yeah, me too. That was fascinating. It was really interesting. Thank you very much for coming on and telling us that.
I thought we were going to have trouble filling the hour, and especially once I started realizing I was talking so fast, but...
No, we managed.
It sounds like we're wrapping up, I want to sneak in a plug for the PHP UK conference, which is happening on February 20th. I'll be there. Will you be there?
So will I.
I'm actually on your island right now. I've invaded. I'm I don't know, half an hour away from London right now.
Ooh. Oh, in which direction?
Northeastish, Hertfordshire.
Ah, okay.
That way.
So are you just attending or are you talking?
I am going to be talking. I'm going to be giving an update on the status of the PHP Foundation. I will hopefully have a exciting announcement to share, hopefully. Stats for what we've been up to, what we were hoping to do next year. And good stuff.
Cool. Well, we'll be there. We'll definitely be there.
And there is a pre-party on the 19th. Be there as well.
I can't do that one.
What's up, bro? Why not? you don't like parties?
I do like parties, but then it costs me a lot more money if in a hotel.
This isn't something that, you know, is an important thing that your employer might want you to represent yourselves at PHP events, maybe to promote Architect and talk about how important it is to always be learning and that sort of thing. Eric, support your employees.
He is. He's paid for the tickets for the train tickets.
Yeah, he's paying for us to get there. And,
all right.
Yeah, I'm probably just getting the train in the morning before. Unfortunately, I have commitments for the evening before.
Well, if you have commitments, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. How far away are you guys coming from? I actually have no idea where you are.
I'm half an hour on the train, directly south I'll be traveling south.
You'll be traveling south. Okay, yeah,
Just north of London.
Okay. Oh, Eric, let me stop you right there, Sarah Goldman. No.
I'll be there, and we'll be
disappointing.
Well, in all fairness, they are sending us to the conference. So
very generous. Yeah. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, John.
Yes, thank you very much. We'll be there. So come and find us. We'll probably be wearing these very bright tops as well. So we'll be easy found. We got stickers as well. Anyone got stickers?
We also have business cards.
Oh yeah, we have fancy business. So stickers. If you like stickers, come and find us and get stickers. We'll also throw you our business cards as well. All right, nice little.
Very nice.
Yeah. So they do look after us.
They do.
They do.
Just not overnight. You know, I get it.
I mean, I think if I'd have known about this in advance and I'd have sold it enough to Eric, he probably would have paid for the overnight. But no.
Yeah, I didn't realise there was a party the night before either. So I was under the impression it was just for speakers, not attendees. So
I say party. It's a meetup. It's the PHP London monthly meetup. It's
See, what makes this even more concerning is that I was not long ago talking to Paul Dragunas, and he didn't even mention this to me.
Hopefully, I'm supposed to mention it. Oops.
Well, never mind.
There's nothing happening.
Nothing
to see here.
Well, we'll see you on the. It's a Friday, isn't it? Friday morning.
It's Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. Friday morning. So we'll meet you there. And anyone coming along?
17 days.
It is.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Very exciting.
Yeah. And it'll be nice to see some of our listeners there as well. So that'll be great. Right, I think we are getting to the end. I think we've dragged out as much as we can today. So I will say thank you very much for everyone for tuning in and listening. If you are listening on or watching on YouTube or on your podcast, do head over to our Discord channel to join in the chat. When Chris has put the link up on the screen, I can actually read it out to our audio listeners. It's discord.phparch.com. It's been a while since we've done one of these, so I've forgotten everything. to come along. It's not just for when the shows are on. We obviously have this show. We've got the main show with Eric and John that's on a Thursday. And there are also some the community corner done by Scott that's not live, but that's all part of our podcast profile, as you might say. But the Discord is open all week long. There are some great people in there, lots of brilliant discussions and things going on. Sarah's in there occasionally, and we'll pop in and chat, and you'll bump into things with people like package
owners,
developers, owners. I'm going to say it's been a while. I'm a little rusty on all this. do drop into Discord. It'll be great to see you. Give us a like and subscribe on our YouTube channel and help us get the word of PHP out to more people out there. Don't forget about our discount for the PHP Architect magazine. Alive 3 will give you the first 3 months of an annual digital subscription. And if you haven't got your tickets to come to Tech, PHP Tech or JS Tech, then why not? Please do get your tickets. Come over. It is a great conference. We've just been talking about another conference, but I've always found that PHP Tech is quite a very warm and welcoming family. And this year we're opening it up to JavaScript developers as well.
The best bit of that is you're not limited to one particular track. So wherever you buy your ticket, you're going to be able to access all of them. So if you want to go and be a JavaScript developer as well, go to the JavaScript tracks. If you're a JavaScript developer and want to do good languages, come to the PHP tracks. It's fine.
Ooh, shots fired.
Don't worry, we've got security on hand just in case anything kicks off. That's just Eric.
Python's just going to be in the back eating popcorn and being like, this is great, man. This is awesome.
Rumble.
I think we do need to do a PyTech next year as well. So we've got JS Tech, PHP Tech, PyTech. And then the last night is just the Royal Rumble. It's...
You can't call it a Royal Rumble.
We can
call it a Rumble. No. Royal Rumbles. You can't call it a Royal Rumble. It's only a Rumble. There is a copyright on Royal Rumble. It won't be a Royal Rumble. It'll be a Rumble, though. Anyway, back on track. We have our swag shop where you can get some great T-shirts. I still haven't bought that T-shirt that I like. I hope it's still in stock.
So do I. I must get around to actually ordering that.
I know. I keep forgetting to. But yeah, there is one particular, the elephant ink one, really looks really cool. It's from the front cover of the, what was the name of the actual?
The Psychology of Developers.
Yeah, Psychology of Developers issue of our magazine. It's really cool. I like it. Thank you again, Sarah, for joining us. You are our first repeat guest. So thank you very much for that. And
come back for episode 200.
Yeah. I think we'll probably have you on before episode 200 again.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. It's been enlightening, and I've learned a lot, and I think a lot of people out there that have as well. So thank you very much for sharing that knowledge. And I think there's going to be a lot more people using Git work trees in the future. I certainly am going
if
to be
if it makes sense for you.
Yeah.
I don't want to push on anyone who doesn't work for it. But come by the Discord if you have questions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Ask the questions, tag Sarah. I'm sure she'll jump in and answer the questions if you've got any.
And right, after that, I'll tell you where all the skeletons are buried, because I know where a lot of them are.
Well, thank you on that note. Thank you very much, everyone. And we have got a live show next week. Do we want to let them know what we're going to be talking about and who's coming on with us?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if we let people know that it's Ben Ramsey, they'll never, oh dear, did that slip out? And he may be talking about RFCs at PHP.
So please tune in next week, same time, same place, and we'll see you then. Thank you very much. Bye.
I hope Gur's going to